Feel particularly in the heart center. Feel there that there is a movement, a life, an opening. Sometimes it's compared to the lotus flower opening up. And think of your heart opening, softening, opening, allowing a higher love, a love that is not dependent on person or place or thing or situation in life, a love that is transcendent to all of these things and yet is very personal, very intimate, and is always with you. Feel your heart opening so that this love may flow through you like a great river. A river that flows out to all creation. It can flow to a flower in the garden. It can flow to a favorite pet or animal, a child, a parent, husband or wife, friend, or just out to creation in general. That there is no limit to this love that you feel. There is no conscription. It is not dependent on what somebody else does or does not do. It is said that love is God and God is love. And this is true. And so you feel that love. You feel a smile in your heart. It heals wounds. It takes away fear. And it makes you know that you are constantly in touch with the divine essence of your being. It is said that as you give, so shall you receive. As you give away this love, the more you receive it, the more open your heart becomes. The more you constrict it, it is like placing a log jam in the river, and the river no longer flows. We can have our reasons for constricting it. We have been hurt, disappointed. The world can feel unsafe. Yet we pay a terrible, terrible price for the constriction of that love. And many times it is the people who are closest to us that has the capacity to hurt and disappoint us more than anyone, and we withhold our love from them. The first one who pays a penalty for that is ourselves, because we take ourselves out of the flow of love. And so in your mind's eye, seeing that opening of divine love in your heart center, flowing out to one and to all. That to withhold is to enter into a slow death. When the cedar tree is cut into with an axe, it wafts out a wonderful fragrance. And so too we, if we are cut into by the world's vicissitudes, that we too give even more love, more grace. That meditation in mind, I'd like to read to you from the autobiography of a yogi. Out of a remarkable book, this is even perhaps the most remarkable chapter. It is chapter 43 and is entitled The Resurrection of Sri Yukteswar. Sri Yukteswar has recently died. Master was gone away at the time. He had gone to a Kumbh Mela, and he felt terribly bad about this, that he should have been there when his guru left the body. He buried Sri Yukteswar under the sands at Puri. They built a samadhi temple by Master's design since then. And it's a wonderful temple. Been there several times, and it's such a tremendous feeling of peace and joy. But at this time, Yogananda is feeling very terrible about things. And so he writes, Lord Krishna, the glorious form of the avatar appeared in a shimmering blaze as I sat in my room at the Regent Hotel in Bombay. Shining over the roof of a high building across the street, the ineffable vision had suddenly burst upon my sight as I gazed out of my long, open third-story window. The divine figure waved to me, smiling and nodding and greeting. When I could not understand the exact message of Lord Krishna, he departed with a gesture of blessing. Wondrously uplifted, I felt that some special event was presaged. My Western voyage had, for the time being, been canceled. I was scheduled for several public addresses in Bombay before leaving on a return trip to Bengal. Sitting on my bed in the Bombay Hotel at 3 o'clock in the afternoon of June 19, 1936, 1 week after the vision of Krishna, I was roused from my meditation by a beatific light. Before my open and astonished eyes, the whole room was transformed into a strange world, the sunlight transmuted into supernal splendor. Waves of rapture engulfed me as I beheld the flesh and blood form of Sri Yukteswar. My son, Master spoke tenderly, on his face an angel-bewitching smile. For the first time in my life, I did not kneel at his feet in greeting, but instantly advanced to gather him hungrily in my arms. Moment of moments, the anguish of the past months was toll I counted weightless against the torrential bliss now descending. Master mine, beloved of my heart, why did you leave me? I was incoherent in an excess of joy. Why did you let me go to the Kumbh Mela? How bitterly I have blamed myself for leaving you. I did not want to interfere with your happy anticipation of seeing the pilgrimage spot where I first met Babaji. I left you only for a little while. Am I not with you again? But is it you, Master, the same Lion of God? Are you wearing a body like the one I buried underneath the cruel sands of Puri? Yes, my child, I am the same. This is a flesh and blood body. Though I see it as ethereal, to your sight it is physical. From the cosmic atoms, I created an entirely new body, exactly like that cosmic dream physical body which you laid beneath the dream sands at Puri in your dream world. I am in truth resurrected, not on earth, but on an astral planet. Its inhabitants are better able than earthly humanity to meet my lofty standards. There you and your exalted loved ones shall someday come to be with me. Deathless Guru, tell me more. Master gave a quick, mirthful chuckle. Please, dear one, he said, won't you relax your hold a little? Only a little. I had been embracing him with an octopus grip. I could detect the same faint, fragrant, natural odor which had been characteristic of his body before. The thrilling touch of his divine flesh still persists around the inner sides of my arms and in my palms whenever I recall those glorious hours. As prophets are sent on earth to help men work out their physical karma, So I have been directed by God to serve on an astral planet as a savior. Sri Yukteswar explained, it is called Hiranyaloka, or illumined astral planet. There I am abiding, there I am aiding advanced beings to rid themselves of astral karma and thus attain liberation from astral births. The dwellers on Hiranyaloka are highly developed spiritually. All of them have acquired in their last earth incarnation the meditation-given power of consciously leaving their physical bodies at death. No one can enter Hiranyaloka unless he has passed on earth beyond the state of Sabbakalpa Samadhi into the higher state of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Now here it must be said that Sabbakalpa Samadhi is when you sit in deep meditation and you feel yourself completely withdrawn in and you feel the bliss and the joy and the expansive nature of God. But when you move this body and go to enter into this world, you lose that sense of omniscience and omnipresence. And so through continued deepened meditation, attunement, and purification of the mind, you eventually are able to not only experience that expansive, blissful state when you are seated in posture or a very still state, but you are also able to experience it when you're moving around in this world. This world itself becomes blissful in nature. You see that you live in a sea of bliss, of joy, of love, of light. It is all around you. And you wonder at it. You wonder, how could I be so ignorant of this manifestation of God imminent in this world? I had eyes, but I could not see it. I had ears, but I could not hear it. And so this transformation and this gradual refinement until you can operate in this world as anybody else can, and yet you hold this high state of consciousness. This is Nirvikalpa Samadhi. The Hiranyaloka inhabitants have already passed through the ordinary astral spheres where nearly all beings from earth go at death. There they worked out many seeds of their past incarnations in the astral worlds. None but advanced beings can perform such redemptive work effectually in the astral worlds. Then, in order to free their souls more fully from the cocoon of karmic traces lodged in their astral bodies, these higher beings were drawn by cosmic law to be reborn in their astral bodies. These higher beings into the higher astral bodies at Hiranyaloka, the astral sun or heaven, where I have resurrected to help them. There are also highly advanced beings on Hiranyaloka who have come from the superior subtler causal world. My mind was now in such perfect attunement with my gurus that he was conveying his word pictures to me, partly by speech and partly by thought transference. I was thus quickly receiving his idea tabloids. You have read in the scriptures, Master went on, that God encased the human soul successively in three bodies, the idea or causal body, the subtle astral body, seat of man's mental and emotional natures, and the gross physical body. On earth, man is equipped with his physical senses. An astral being works with his consciousness and feelings and a body made of lifetrons, or prana. A causal-bodied being remains in the blissful realm of ideas. My work is with those astral beings who are preparing to enter the causal world. Adorable Master, please tell me more about the astral cosmos. Though I had slightly relaxed my embrace at Sri Yukteswar's request, my arms were still around him. Treasure beyond all treasures, my guru who had laughed at death to reach me. There are many astral planets, teeming with astral beings, Master began. The inhabitants use astral planes or masses of light to travel from one planet to another faster than electricity and radioactivity energies. The astral universe, made of various subtle vibrations of light and color, is hundreds of times larger than the material cosmos. The entire physical creation hangs like a little solid basket under the huge luminous balloon of the astral sphere. Just as many physical suns and stars roam in space, so there are countless astral, solar, and stellar systems. Their planets have astral suns and moons, more beautiful than physical ones. The astral luminaries resemble the aurora borealis, the sunny astral aura being more dazzling than the mild-rayed moon aura. The astral day and night are longer than those of Earth. The astral world is infinitely beautiful, clean, pure, and orderly. There are no dead planets or barren lands. The terrestrial blemishes, weeds, bacteria, insects, snakes, are absent. Unlike the variable climates and seasons of the Earth, the astral planets maintain the even temperature of an eternal spring, with occasional luminous white snow and rain of many colored lights. Astral planets abound in opal lakes and bright seas and rainbow rivers. The ordinary astral universe is not the subtler astral heaven of Hiranyaloka. It is peopled with millions of astral beings who have come more or less recently from the Earth, and also with myriads of fairies, mermaids, fishes, animals, goblins, gnomes, demigods, and spirits, all residing on different astral planets in accordance with karmic qualifications. Various spheric mansions or vibratory regions are provided for good and evil spirits. Good ones can travel freely, but the evil spirits are confined to limited zones. In the same way that human beings live on the surface of the earth, worms inside the soil, fish in the water, birds in the air, so astral beings of different grades are assigned to suitable vibratory quarters. Among the fallen dark angels expelled from other worlds, friction and war take place with liftronic bombs or mental matrix vibratory rays. These beings dwell in the gloom-drenched regions of lower astral cosmos, working out their evil karma. In the vast realms above the dark astral prison, all is shining and beautiful. The astral cosmos is more naturally attuned than the earth to the divine will and plan of perfection. Every astral object is manifested primarily by the will of God, and partially by the will call of astral beings. They possess the power of modifying or enhancing the grace and form of anything already created by the Lord. He has given his astral children the freedom and privilege of changing or improving at will the astral cosmos. On earth, a solid must be transformed into a liquid or other form through natural or chemical processes. But astral solids are changed into astral liquids, gases, and energy solely and instantly by the will of the inhabitants. The earth is dark with warfare and murder in the sea, land, and air, my guru continued. But the astral realms know a happy harmony and equality. Astral beings dematerialize or materialize their forms at will. Flowers or fish or animals can metamorphose themselves for a time into astral men. All astral beings are free to assume any form and can easily commune together. No fixed, definite, natural law hems them round. Any astral tree, for example, can be successfully asked to produce an astral mango or any other desired fruit, flower, or indeed any other object. Certain karmic restrictions are present, but there are no distinctions in the astral world about desirability of various forms. Everything is vibrant with God's creative light. No one is born of woman. Offspring are materialized by astral beings through the help of their cosmic will into specially patterned, astrally condensed forms. The recent physically disembodied being arrives in an astral family through an invitation drawn by similar mental and spiritual tendencies. The astral body is not subject to cold or heat or other natural conditions. The anatomy includes an astral brain, or the thousand-petaled lotus of light, and six awakened centers in the Sushumna, or the astral cerebral spinal axis. The heart draws cosmic energy as well as light from the astral brain and pumps it to the astral nerves and body cells or laftrons. Astral beings can affect their bodies by laftronic force or by mantraic vibrations. The astral body is an exact counterpart to the last physical form. Astral beings retain the same appearance which they possessed in youth and in their various earthly sojourn. Occasionally, an astral being chooses, like myself, to retain his old age appearance. Master, emanating the very essence of youth, chuckled merrily. Unlike the spatial, three-dimensional, physical world, cognized only by the five senses, the astral spheres are visible to the all-inclusive sixth-sense intuition, Sri Yukteswar went on. By sheer intuitional feeling, all astral beings see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. They possess three eyes, two of which are partly closed. The third and chief astral eye, vertically placed on the forehead, is open. The astral beings have the all outer sensory organs. They have ears and eyes, nose, tongue, and skin. But they employ the intuitional sense to experience sensations through any part of the body. They can see through the ear or nose or skin. They are able to hear through the eyes or the tongue and can taste through the ears or skin and so forth. Man's physical body is exposed to countless dangers and is easily hurt or maimed. The ethereal astral body may occasionally be cut or bruised, but is healed at once by mere willing. Gurudev, are all astral persons beautiful? Beauty in the astral world is known to be a spiritual quality and not an outward confirmation, Sri Yukteswar replied. Astral beings therefore attach little importance to facial features. They have the privilege, however, of costuming themselves at will with new, colorful, astrally materialized bodies. Just as worldly men don new array for gala events, so astral beings find occasions to bedeck themselves in specially designed forms. Joyous astral festivities on the higher astral planes, like Hiranyaloka, take place when a being is liberated from the astral world through spiritual advancement, and is therefore ready to enter the heaven of the causal beings. On such occasions, the invisible Heavenly Father and the saints who are merged in Him materialize themselves into bodies of their own choice and join the astral celebration. In order to please His beloved devotee, the Lord takes any desired form. If the devotee worships through devotion, he sees God as Divine Mother. To Jesus, the Father aspect of the infinite was appealing beyond other conceptions. The individuality with which the Creator has endowed each of His creatures makes every conceivable and inconceivable demand on the Lord's versatility. My Guru and I laughed happily together. Friends of other lives easily recognize one another in the astral world, Sri Yukteswar went on in his beautiful flute-like voice. Rejoicing at the immortality of friendship, they realize the indestructibility of love, often doubted at the time of sad, delusive partings of earthly life. The intuition of astral beings pierces through the veil and observes human activities on earth. But man cannot view the astral world unless his sixth sense is somewhat developed. thousands of earth dwellers have momentarily glimpsed an astral being or an astral world. The advanced beings on Hiranyaloka remain mostly awake in ecstasy during the long astral day and night, helping to work out intricate problems of cosmic government and the redemption of prodigal sons, earthbound souls. When the Hiranyaloka beings sleep, they have occasional dreamlike astral visions. Their minds are usually engrossed in the consciousness of highest nirvikalpa bliss. Inhabitants in all parts of the astral worlds are still subject to mental agonies. The sensitive minds of higher astral beings on planets like Hiranyaloka feel keen pain if any mistake is made in conduct or perception of truth. These advanced beings endeavor to attune their every act and thought with perfection of spiritual law. Communication among the astral inhabitants is held entirely by astral telepathy and television. There's none of the confusion and misunderstanding of the written and spoken word which earth dwellers must endure. Just as persons on the cinema screen appear to move and act through a series of light pictures and do not actually breathe, so astral beings walk and work as intelligently guided and coordinated images of light, without the necessity of drawing power from oxygen. Man depends upon solids, liquids, gases, and energy for sustenance. Astral beings sustain themselves principally by cosmic light. And so Sri Yukteswar draws this picture of what it's like. And through this, we can learn through inference that when loved ones have left the body, that unless they are dedicated towards evil and towards war and towards disharmony, they will be drawn into an astral life, into an astral family, into an astral world that is very highly suited for them. Through the experiences that God has given me through various times, I have remembered various times when I have lived in other places in these higher astral worlds. And I realized that so much of our difficulty in adjusting to this world coming into it is that on these higher astral planets, there is no disharmony. There are not people who have are thugs or bullies and that kind of thing. And so we enter into this world and we're such a mixed population. Everybody can be here, from the somebody like Hitler all the way to somebody like Gandhi, living on the earth at the same time. And so there we have this refined sensibility where we are with kindred spirits, where we are not exposed to these most difficult people. But thrown here onto earth, everybody is thrown in mixed together. There's a great purpose behind this, because if we are only with like-minded people, it's easy to love them because they love us and we are in concert one with another. But when we meet individuals who are difficult, when we meet individuals who really are so counter to light, then it stretches us. It's painful, that is to be sure, but it's a pain with a purpose. Because through those experiences, and as we put ourselves into a spiritual life, we are asked to love all and to give to all, as we were experiencing with the love that flows through the heart. If you only give to people who love you, that's an easy thing to do. But if somebody reviles you, if somebody goes after you, it is more difficult to love that individual because they cause you and people around you pain. But how important it is to have this universal vision where we love that individual, not for their behavior, but in their soul, in their essence. They were created by God, sustained by God, and therefore Somewhere buried deep in their nature is that divine seed. And through love, that seed might be awakened. Now, that doesn't make us a doormat. Sometimes people need to be stood up to. Sometimes they need to be resisted when they're doing evil. And this we must do with great courage. However, underneath it all, we always hold that individual in high regard because the divine seed is in them. And through that loving of their soul, they might awaken to something greater. There's a wonderful story when we were with the Amish, and they have a nonviolent creed. But it's one thing just not do anything against somebody else. It's something else to forgive somebody. And they had an event where somebody went mentally insane. Wasn't part of their group, but he did odd jobs for their community. So he was known to them and he to them. And so he decided that he was going to walk into a schoolhouse and he was going to kill all the children and all the teachers who were there. And he succeeded with about 6 of the children. And others escaped. They had injuries, but they were not killed, along with a couple of the teachers. When the community, of course, heard all of this, there was great shock. There was great mourning. And they came to know that this individual was actually married and that he had children. And they gathered together a collection, a substantial amount of money, because they knew that she would not have the support of her husband anymore, and the children would not have the support of their father anymore. And they gave this substantial amount of money to the mother and children of this man who had killed their own children. Now that's really walking your talk. And it's a tough thing. It's a tough thing to overcome anger, resentment, fear, and to see the higher light, to see the higher life. But what does that do for us when we're able to do that? If you remain stuck with resentment, with anger, with fear, that keeps you imprisoned in those emotions. And you are the one who pays the price because you no longer feel God's grace as fully and completely as otherwise you might. But when you release those things that keep you bound to somebody who has done you wrong, it is not to say that those things have not happened. It is not to say that those things have not created hurt and harm to yourself and to others. But it is saying that hanging on to it is going to cost you and doesn't help anyone. When we think of revenge, what we really want is we want that person to suffer, but with the purpose. We want them to understand what pain is like. They have created pain seemingly wantonly, without any thought of its consequence for other people. So we want that individual to suffer pain so that they will learn compassion, so that they won't go out and do that ever again. It is a risky bargain as to whether we create some pain or hold a grudge against somebody that they will learn that lesson. It's unlikely just holding a grudge against somebody will do that. But if we can hold that person in the light and in the love of the divine and let go of our anger. Now, the grief is a process. And so we may experience a period of time of shock and disbelief and then a deep sense of grief, anger, anguish. And then it may come to the time where we come to accept this is what happened. and it is no longer worth it for me to hang on to this grief. It's time to let it go. There's a wonderful story of Ananda Moy Ma. Of course, Ma was known all through India as such a tremendous saint. And there is a mother who lost her child. I can't imagine anything much worse in this life than a parent losing a child. And so this mother had gone into a deep state of depression. And it had lasted a very long time, longer than what people thought the grief should last for. And they were worried about her. And she sat listless day after day, not able to engage with people, in a very deeply indrawn state. So finally, they brought this mother to Ananda Moy Ma when she had traveled near their town and just placed her in front of the saint. In India, they have such great faith in saints that just having the darshan means the sight of, and just having the sight of a saint can have a great benefit to that individual. So they brought this grieving mother and placed her in front of Ananda Moy Ma. Suddenly, Ma started to cry. And then she was uncontrollably sobbing. And the sobbing just went on and on. And then the mother kind of woke up out of her grief. She realized Ma was just in such distress. And she went up to Ma and she put her arm around her and she started comforting Ma. Instead of being so indrawn and withdrawn into her own grief. And that was a huge shift for her. And from that point on, she started to heal in that grief that she'd been holding. So there's a time for grieving. There definitely is. And of letting go, and feeling the sadness, feeling the sorrow. The best point of view is that of the witness. We feel that grief, that sorrow, that anguish come up, and we watch it flow through us, and we give it somewhere to go. One human tendency is to put it on the merry-go-round of the mind. And around and around and around it goes. And it doesn't go anywhere. And it doesn't produce anything. It doesn't do anything good or positive. It just keeps us in a despondent state. But if we give it somewhere to go, just we're imagining that love flowing through our heart. If we could imagine grief flowing through us, we're breathing, letting it go, letting it go, letting it go. And as we let it go, it begins to change. It's not constant. Sometimes it's sadness. Sometimes it may be anger. Sometimes it may be disbelief and shock. And it just hits all these various places. And it comes of its own volition. But we don't attach ourselves to it. And we give it, we allow it to flow through us, moving through us. And as it does so, it completely cleans itself out. We're not attached to it. And we allow it to go through its entire process to where we come to that point of acceptance. And with acceptance comes peace. And we realize, for whatever reason, if it's the loss of a person or a loved one, and they've gone past this body, it was their time to do so. Now, because of our attachment to children, that's oftentimes harder to do if a man or a woman has lived a full life all the way to the end. We can say, well, they had a full life. But what about this child? Every life is precious to the Creator. And every life has a certain amount of time on this earth. And when the time comes, that child leaves. And they have fulfilled their karma for that particular lifetime. And while there is a sense of it being out of order, and that they hadn't had a chance to live their life full, when we take it into a larger context, we see that it exactly fulfilled that soul's need for this lifetime. And in doing so, we can let them go and release them. It's not caring. It's just simply seeing them in a larger context. that they're on a larger journey than just this physical body. This physical body is just a tiny, tiny bit of who we are. And when we connect with who we truly are, we start to let go of our tenacious holding on to this body as if it is all. It's that greater perspective that we gain by God attunement that we start to see we live in a much larger context than just simply a human body, even just a single lifetime. What is 60 or 70 or 80 or even 100 years? It's just the snap of the fingers in eternity. It is just a tiny, tiny bit of that soul and that soul's evolution. We start to feel that way. We start to feel that there is such a bigger picture. And we let go of so many of the little things that happen in our own material life. Now, it's still important how we live this life because we have come to learn certain lessons. But when we have that eternal nature, in yoga language, that's called Sat, S-A-T, and it's the eternal self. It's the eternal self. And the second name for God is Chid. And Chid is consciousness. So it's the eternal self with consciousness. And the third name is Ananda. And that is bliss. And so God is that eternal nature. And it is consciousness. And it is bliss. And we are made in the likeness and image of the divine being. Therefore, likeness is spirit. We too have Sat Chid Ananda inside of us. We have the eternal being. We have consciousness. We have bliss. And the more you identify with that, you let go of the limitations of this world. You still live in the world, but not of the world. You start feeling a blissful nature, a fountain of bliss inside of you that just simply wells up. You feel that love flowing through your heart. You are filled with the divine light. And you really discover who and what you really are. And you have been that since the foundation of creation, only we have forgotten it. We have not fully embraced it. This is what leaving the Garden of Eden, where we walked with God and easily communed with Him. And through choices that we made, we removed ourselves from that garden. It is a story of every soul who has chosen to move out from that eternal oneness. Now, in truth, we can't ever really separate ourselves from God. But we do so in consciousness. We lose our memory and our awareness of it. And it is this pain, this suffering that is created by our separation from God. And we look in so many places in this world. If I only had this, if I only had that, then I would be complete. And we chase after these pots of gold at the end of the rainbow, time after time. And true, we can get a temporary happiness, but it always dissipates. It always evaporates in our very hands. And so through those repeated experiences, we finally come to the conclusion, there's nothing in this world that can give me lasting happiness. That can only be attained through spiritual resurrection. The resurrection of God consciousness within the soul. God being that eternal self, consciousness, and bliss. And so in meditation, we put aside the things of this world. We close our eyes to this world. We close our senses off to this world. We put it on the higher sense, places within the body here, at the ajna, the place between the eyebrows. Let thine eye be single, and thy whole body shall be filled with light. And through that, we awaken that divine consciousness that's been sleeping inside of us. Then we even go beyond these astral worlds Sri Yukteswar is talking about, as beautiful as they are. We even go beyond the astral heaven where he is currently incarnate. He's obviously already gone beyond that himself. We go beyond the tremendous causal or idea realms, so closely attuned to God, and yet a film of separation remains there, a sense of self that is separate, and finally we merge into complete union with that which has always been. And we don't need to die in this body in order to attain that. We can attain it right while we are living. In fact, that is the real purpose for which we have taken incarnation. So we go about doing the things that we do in this world to keep body and soul together. But we never lose sight of what the true purpose that we came into this life with. So we take comfort that when souls leave this body, I remember God showed me one time when I left this body, not this particular body, but a previous body that I had had, and I was lifted up, and a tremendous being of light was next to me as I reviewed my life, and I realized the good things and the bad things, all directed towards learning. And then I entered into a new life, and it was beautiful and it was wonderful and free of so many of the things that had bothered me in human life on earth. And then my own destiny drew me back into earth, and when I did so, many of those things that I had been struggling with came back because they were triggered by being in a physical body again. So I had learned wisdom, I had learned more freedom, and I brought that back with me. But still the struggle continued of old habits. Because once I donned a body again, that triggered those tendencies. And so that is what we have to wrestle with in this world. But as we perfect ourselves in this life, even if we were to take incarnation again, we don't have to go through that again if we've resolved the things that are bothering us now, if we have discovered our freedom. And when we discover our freedom, there's nothing compelling us to come back to this plane of consciousness again. We can if we choose to, or if God within us chooses to, but we're not compelled to. Now, many people would gladly give it up. But when you know that you have God, that trumps everything else. That's better than everything else. And if God were to say, my child, you could help me in the evolution of this world, would you come? Would you say no? I don't think so. So these are things to think on, and for us all to remember the real purpose why we have come. And when those who leave us leave this body, that they continue on in a very, very happy way. Now, with the caveat that there are those who would not want to be in a world of light and goodness, and so they are given a realm in order for them to exist in. And they can work out their wars and their tendencies towards evil and destruction and darkness. Because if you take a worm and you put him out on the sidewalk, out in the light, he is so thoroughly uncomfortable there. All he wants to do is get back into the dirt. And so likewise, you take somebody who has lived a life of evil and exposed them to light, they are pained by that light. that astral heaven would not be a heaven to them at all, but a hell. So that they're drawn back into the dark, dreary regions where they're actually more comfortable. But for most people, even if they haven't attained a high state of realization, they glory in being in that light and in that higher realm of the astral. And so we find that life is ultimately very, very fair. We think about souls being born into this world and somebody's born crippled or having mental problems or other kinds of things, and we think, how is that fair? And yet when we look at life through a wider lens, we see that there is this perfect law of cause and effect. And that that individual is not just being punished, but everything that happens to them is with a desire to awaken them. Awaken them to a higher life and a higher light. So we can pray for this world. We can pray for all individuals in this world. Because as the song says, we all come from God. And into Him we all return, like a drop of rain, returning to the ocean, like a ray of light, returning to the sun. We all come from God. And when we see life from this wide-angle lens, we see that it is perfect, it is beautiful, and it is wonderful. That I give you pranams, I bow to the light within you. And that you may experience that bliss, that joy, that love. Might let go of those balance sheets that we keep up here, who did what, and just know, this is God living His life through you. And that the benefits that you get is from being attuned to God itself. So when you love and the love of God inside of you, the joy that you get from that love, whatever somebody does with it is up to them. But you already have the benefit because you've experienced that love flowing through you. So all my love to you. God's awakening within you. It's wonderful to have us have this time together.
Thank you, David. That was fun.
My great joy.